This is Behind the Curtain with Justin Scott and Spiegel on 98 Rock.
I'd like to thank a new friend of ours. She's been in a couple of times now. Mike, would this be her second visit?
Yeah, second time.
And if you listen coming up, Josh has a laugh because at the end of a call, we're like, we'll take your answer off the air. And for a couple of moments, we sounded like, like one of those more buttoned up NPR, don't tell me, all things considered kind of programs. It's pretty interesting, though. The thing I was bummed out about was to find out that I can't get a medical marijuana card because I'm a gun owner.
Yeah, that was weird that they could just, if you want one thing, they can just take away one of your constitutional rights.
Oh, okay. You want to have recreational weed? That's fine. You're not allowed to have toilet paper anymore.
What?
Yeah, that was a strange connection.
It just seemed, for me, like, I don't know, did they do that in maybe like as a form of a deterrent?
Probably, yeah. Just if they figure, hey, you got to choose.
Right.
Our love of gun versus love of spliff.
Right.
Won't be equal.
Even though, like, if you're high, shooting somebody is probably the last thing you'd ever want to do.
You want to hear the sound of a gun going off when you're all ripped up? God. Hell no, man.
Nobody's starting a fight high on marijuana.
Yeah, when's the last time there was that huge weed smoke riddled gun battle? That's not a thing, but you'll hear me make the joke coming up. Yeah, but you could still have just swimming pools of rum and vodka and moonshine and what have you. I bet some of the judges that passed that law have a bottle of scotch in their desk that they signed off on. But it was still a pretty good conversation. Got some great calls about it. The legalization of medicinal marijuana. Leah Heiss from the Chesapeake Institute of Health joined us on Tuesday. Joining us again, glad to have her back, from the Chesapeake Institute of Health, it is Leah Heiss. Leah, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And we had a conversation that got started maybe it was the week before last and into last week about the 12-year-old girl who sued, I believe it was the attorney general. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yes. Saying, hey, stupid. We're all sick of getting hopped up and cross-eyed and crippled on opiates and fentanyls and oxycodones and hydrocodones. You know, there's options out there. And this young girl suffered from these just murderous seizures. Horrible seizures, man. She had this seizure that, I mean, her body would literally shake itself apart. And her parents, you know, got her this medicinal marijuana treatments, completely turned her life around. And she's screaming to the heavens, like, look at me. I can live my life. I'm a 12-year-old girl again. And she took that damn thing all the way to the top. And that made us think of you because you came in earlier the year talking about setting up an operation around here. And I want an update from you.
So it's going. It's going slowly. We've pulled building permits. We've secured a property. We are located at 3907 Falls Road, right down the street from you guys.
Oh, wow.
Across from McDonald's.
I suddenly feel sick.
I do not feel good. I am in need of something for my split ends and rampant anxiety.
Rampant anxiety, maybe.
Nice. But
not split ends.
Sure. Not so much.
Nice. I just have weak jeans. Yeah, there it is right there. Okay, I've seen the construction on that building. There's a whole fresh, it's near the big K&S sign, right across from some row homes and the Redfish Liquors.
I don't think it's up there, no.
Not there? No, because I see, I've driven past and there's been like crews out there painting something. Maybe it's not your spot, but someone's gussying up that spot and I regularly stop into Redfish Liquors.
Oh,
yeah,
it
yeah.
may be, there is another dispensary located in the Wyman Park area.
That's probably what I'm thinking of. We're driven past.
That's Alan Stapleton's. He's a great guy.
But when we had you in last, you had sort of a tentative timetable. You would have hoped to have been operational or at least rudimentary set up by fall, early winter. And obviously here we are, and that hasn't come to pass. And Josh points out accurately throughout news that, you know, there's just so much red tape and crap you got to cut through. And
yeah, what is the
what's the biggest obstacle, right?
What's going on?
So the biggest obstacle was getting through the actual zoning process and making sure that we would be approved to sell medical cannabis in that particular location. So we were approved for zoning, got the property, and now it's doing what any general contractor has to do, try to push permits through the Baltimore City and get ready to build.
One of the misconceptions that we had, and we'll probably take some calls outside of sports, 410-338-1098 if you have questions, is that we open the phones to people that were opposed to the legalization. We're trying to do an equal time thing here, because sure. I think if you ask 100 people these days, 95 of them are like, yeah, legalize it. We don't care. There's so many other battles to fight in this country
now.
Not Scott. Scott is, that's the devil's lettuce, man. Put down Satan's cabbage. And we had a guy call up that I think was one of the bigger misconceptions, was like, I could see there being medicinal use for this stuff, but a 12-year-old smoking a joint? Come on, man. And that's where the disconnect was, that this guy was under the misunderstanding that this 12-year-old in question that was suing the attorney general was getting her medicine right. by putting this big old blunt to her lips and having mom hit it with a butane torch. Like, no, that couldn't be less than what she's doing.
Yeah, that's not what she's doing, and that's not what a lot of pediatric patients are doing. That's not to say that smoking may not be the best delivery mechanism for your particular illness.
But for children, I don't think anybody is going to be putting like a lit something to their lips. They understand that they're children. They have small right. pink little bubblegum lungs. They're still developing. They're not going to put, I mean, even with marijuana, there's still carcinogens and stuff in there. Not as mm-hmm. bad as your standard cigarette, but you're not going to put that in a kid's lungs. You can determine that once you're 20s, 30s, 40s. But that was the one thing that jumped out at me when we had that conversation, that people are like, if I needed this for my kid's tremors, am I really going to put a bong to their lips? Like, no, I think you're misunderstanding.
A lot of times it's nasal spray.
Oh, wow. They got a nasal spray now. Oh, yeah. I saw a guy, he was on an airplane and he had an inhaler. And
yep,
it was like, it looked like an asthma inhaler. He just went,
and
he
was cool.
Like, he's like, how do you medicate on a plane? And I was like, oh, pretty interesting. And the other thing is, we need to realize that, you know, not everything is just ground up flowers that are, you know, put into bongs or treats. It's, you know, they're working with these in labs and they're like distilling it down. They're getting the oils, they're getting the CBDs, and they're extracting all of the different properties out of this plant, much like we do with any other plant. I mean, corn, we ingest in a million different
yeah.
forms throughout the day.
Absolutely.
There's corn syrup, there's corn chips. I mean, it's just like that. And you distract it, and they extract it to the point where you get the medicine and it doesn't have psychoactive properties. So it'll help you. And you won't feel stoned.
Yes.
So it's not like everybody thinks with this medical marijuana thing that it's just going to be a nation of stoned people walking
around.
It's
going to be clouds of pot smoke in the air saying, hey, it's for my anxiety, headaches, and tremors.
Where there are some people where, you know, if they're having appetite issues or stuff like that, where, you know, maybe they will feel a little bit more hungry and stoned-ish. But there's also people that won't even feel that.
Yeah, and it depends on what particular strain that you take. You may not get any of those side effects at all. And sometimes people are saying that it's the actual pesticides and things in the cannabis plant itself when you're growing it that are causing the side effects and not necessarily the plant itself. So as we move away into a more organic, well, that's a terrible word, but organic
yeah.
with the quotation marks around it, as you get into a more organic way of growing and extracting it, you're not going to get those particular side effects because the plant itself is pure.
Again, Leah Heiss from the Chesapeake Institute of Health joining us, 410-338-1098, out of Sports with Keith. We'll take a couple calls if you have any questions. Once the operation gets going, the doors are open, you get your medicinal marijuana card from online, we can talk about that whole process, and from your physician, what sort of products are going to be available in the store? Will there be actual cannabis? Will there be multiple stuff, the lozenges, the drops?
We'll have multiple stuff. And in Maryland, you're not supposed to have the edibles. So what you won't see, like you might see in Colorado and other states, is the gummy bears.
Chocolate bars,
stuff. Those types of things. But we will have lozenges, elixirs, cough syrup type things.
And I hate to even float this out there, but it does beg the question that you're going to be one of the first medicinal marijuana dispensaries in the state, and especially in the city. Right now, the city ain't doing so hot, and the criminals are outnumbering the good folks sometimes, it seems. You got to have yourself some security there. I mean, people, I would look at it as a medicinal marijuana facility. There's going to be some other ne'er-do-wells out there being like, there's trash bags of pot in there. What window can I sneak through? I mean, I'm hoping you guys
security
are going to have this stuff.
Yeah, security is probably the number one thing that the state's looking at whenever they
army.
Do our inspections.
You're going to need an army.
Humvees out front. I need machine gun nests. I need a sniper across the building.
Not quite the National
Mind
Guard.
Mind the lobby.
We would like to make sure that when our people come in, they feel very welcome and that it's a warm environment. But there will also be cameras and monitoring systems and guards. And the guards may be people you don't recognize as guards.
Ah, cool. Plain clothes.
But everyone will feel welcome and warm and safe.
Keith, the person to my left, your right, is Leah Heiss from the Chesapeake Institute of Health.
How are you?
We're going to be taking calls coming up. She's going to be trying to get some medicinal marijuana operations up and running sooner rather than later. And we were talking about CTE and players in the NFL and out of the NFL and how medicinal marijuana, THC, could possibly help them.
Big time.
Can you say real quick before we jump out of sports and get to some of these calls about, you said something about an emergency kit that's...
So there's a doctor that I know in Natick, and she's working with a number of NFL players, and she believes that if you can give a dose of medical marijuana to someone who has a concussion immediately, has an immediate a traumatic brain injury, that it will help prevent the inflammation in the brain, and then the concussion won't be as severe. So she's thinking about creating almost like a first aid kit for NFL and also NBA
players that
would have it in it, and you give an immediate dose.
Interesting.
So someone gets their bell rung real quick and give them a bit of this, and they might elongate their career, if not quality of life.
You know who the NFL player is no longer in the league that was leading the charge? Eugene Monroe of Virginia. I think he still lives in the Columbia area, if I'm not mistaken. And
he's with a group called GTI here in Maryland that applied for a grow license, and hopefully we'll be getting one. They're one of the people that have sued the state.
No kidding. Gene's smart. He's a very intelligent guy.
Very, very good.
You know, the NBA, I don't even think they test anymore for marijuana in their substance abuse program.
He will be disciplined here in house.
Sorry about that.
John, if the NBA tested, there'd be nobody left.
I mean, it would be. and I'm sure... You know, there's other sports that would follow. So, well, good luck with that. And
thank you.
One other thing, Maryland's basketball team wins last night. They're 5-0. They play in the Emerald Classic down in Destin, Florida this coming weekend. So, Thanksgiving, man. A lot of basketball tournaments, a lot of big football games coming up. And the Navy plays Houston on Friday. So, a lot to talk about the rest of the week.
Keith Mills, we'll talk to you again, 7 o'clock hour.
Yes, we have Leah Heiss in studio. She is with the Chesapeake Institute of Health, and phone lines are jammed, texts are flying in, lots of questions, and I guess we'll see if we can answer them the best we can.
What's like the number one question you get, Leah, that we talked about misconceptions earlier about taking, you know, something medicinally, either through, like Scott pointed out, the inhaler, or you've got I've even heard of like eye drops or dropper tablets for the tongue, and then we get calls saying, you know, hey, I want to take it, but I'm not going to bring some joint or a bong to my lips. That was one of the consistent misconceptions we got. What do you get when people ask you questions?
I think the question that you're referring to in regards to delivery mechanisms, that's one of the big questions we get. Do I have to smoke it in order to do it? And the other big question is, am I going to spend my entire life stoned? And that's not necessarily the point. You can microdose with it. And there are patients that will microdose all day. There are some patients that only need to have 5 milligrams a day. But it's titrated in a way that it's designed to help with whatever particular medical condition the person has.
And Sativa Anderson, what were you looking up over there, cowboy? You were, there's all kinds of salad on your computer screen.
Yeah, I was looking up the most popular marijuana strains, and I was going to ask you, Leah, when it comes to medicinal marijuana, what is like the strain or strains that you typically go to?
And what's with the names? Like Stallone chest hair and,
Warrior Foot. Yeah, I would love to see a day when we were not judging strains based on a particular name, because the names don't mean anything. A Gorilla Glue that you're getting from one grower might not be the same as a Gorilla Glue that you're getting from another.
It's called Gorilla Glue?
Yeah, Gorilla Glue Hard is a pass. Particular strain name. And you don't have to have those names. We could do it by cannabinoid profiles, and that would help us be able to better understand what the particular strain was, particularly for patients that are traveling from state to state and can't stay within the same grower and that are going to different dispensaries in order to get their medication. They want to make sure that whatever the strain is that they're treating themselves with is the right one. And the only way you can do that is by having the tested genomics.
I'm glad you said that too, because I feel like it might be a a presentation issue. Like if someone, some doctor is going to offer me like, you know, Dynatex sativa. I'm like, oh, that sounds good. But if I have a guy be like, hey, this is called vampire pube. I'm not smoking that. It sounds terrible. And, I've been to some of the dispensaries in L.A. and I've seen some of the pictures that people have sent from their trips to Colorado. And some of these names are so stupid.
Oh, and I'm like, tons of them.
I'm not. I don't want to smoke that. It sounds ridiculous. I want it to sound medicinal if it's supposed to be medicinal.
I saw one in Vegas last week. It was called Hairy Balls or something.
Oh, my God. Why would you want to smoke that? Weird.
Yes. Hey, well, I'm not smoking Hairy Balls. Let's go to some phone calls here. Some folks have been holding for a little bit. Let's go with Jeff in Finksburg. Jeff, you're on with Leah Heiss from the Chesapeake Institute of Health. Good morning.
Morning.
Morning. Hi,
good morning.
So what I want to know is the municipal cannabis have to be, that you're going to be selling, does it have to be grown in the state of Maryland or do you get it from other places? And what about in the non-growing season, if it's grown outside, where do you get it from?
So that's those are two great questions.
Thank you, Jeff.
The first question is, can we buy it out of state? We can't buy it out of state because the federal government prohibits the sale of medical cannabis or recreational cannabis. So everything has to be grown inside of state borders. And there are 15 growers licensed or about to be licensed, 14 right now, in the state of Maryland that will grow all around the state. There are no grows that are outside, no outside grows in the state of Maryland. They're either greenhouse or in warehouse facilities.
And you had just mentioned the federal government. There's a texter that has a couple of questions. It says, does the dispensary have any plans for the possible federal level raids? And you've been hearing that in order to get a medical marijuana card in Maryland that you have to give up your Second Amendment right, the right to bear arms. Is that true?
So unfortunately, you will give up your Second Amendment right to bear arms if you decide to become a medical patient within
really?
The state of the
wow.
Maryland. It's there are a number of issues that when legislation is passed in any state, whether it be recreational or medical, where you become impacted in ways that you may not have originally thought. And the Second Amendment right to bear arms is one of those.
But the dude with a milk crate's worth of moonshine, feel free
no
to keep
problem.
Your 357 Magnum. Yeah. No big deal. You got a swimming pool's worth of vodka in your basement.
What is the how does that work?
That strikes me as bananas.
What is the reasoning or why is that?
I'm not sure why the state decided to do that. There are other states that have decided to do that as well. I don't know if it's just as sort of a background check type thing. And it also could be the fact that it's illegal on a federal level. And if you mix any type of weapons with an illegal narcotic or an illegal
drug. If you have a federal charge, you can't own a firearm. And I hate to get into specifics here. Do you know if that applies to like when you have to have a license to have a handgun, but you could just buy a long gun, rifle, shotgun from your local Walmart or what have you. Does it apply to that also? I mean, you just can't have anything?
That's under the medical cannabis law. I mean, it's not.
Because that like completely negates me. You know, I have rifles at home. I have a handgun at home. So I can't get a medicinal marijuana card.
Probably not.
Wow. That's surprising and disappointing to hear. Let's go to...
You need to go to the legislature.
Yes, I need to, and now I might plan myself a trip. Let's go to BY in Columbia. You are an attorney, you say?
Yes.
Yes, you have a question.
Thank you for taking my call. First, let me just say, what you were just talking about is a Ninth Circuit case where ATF refused to give a gun permit to an individual who had a medical marijuana card but had not consumed marijuana, and that's because the federal government regulates that marijuana as a narcotic. So anyway, my question is, notwithstanding Second Amendment rights, can an attorney who has a bona fide medical marijuana card be disbarred because it's a violation of federal law and all attorneys are obliged to take the oath to defend the Constitution and the laws of the United States? Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks, BY.
I'll hang up and listen.
That's a great question. Actually, that's one I looked into as well.
We're like a real show right now.
Whether or not I was going to use medical cannabis as an alternative for pain relief. was whether or not I would lose my license, both for counseling patients and counseling clients, but also for being a medical marijuana patient myself. I do not believe that it would happen, especially in the state of Maryland, and the State Bar Association, I believe, has done an opinion on this particular issue. In other states, it has not. Disciplinary actions taken against attorneys have been thrown out where they are acting under within the confines of state law, as long as you're making sure that you're telling your client that it is still illegal under federal law.
Somebody wants to know how are companies going to handle this? Like, if you have a prescription for a condition, how can your company say no if you are on your time? How can they say no, and what are your rights? I have had to take pain pills and muscle relaxers that I cannot take at work, but I take at home, and I would rather not take them if medical marijuana is available.
Yeah, I it's a great question. It's one of those policy questions that workers are going to have to workplaces are going to have to think about. You're going to have to write into your drug testing policy that you have a right as a medical cannabis patient to consume cannabis. And that's a general interesting question in terms of what types of policies should we be enacting in relation to all drug consumption, right? Because if you travel to Nevada or you travel to Denver and you're an employee, it's going to stay in your bloodstream for 30 days, but you're still going to pop positive on a drug test. And that's really not fair when you have the right and it's recreationally legal in another state, even if you're coming here. But the federal government did just rule that federal government workers are not to use medical cannabis.
All right, let's go to Sarah in Frederick. Sarah, good morning. Thank you for holding.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, Lam.
Good morning.
I am a teacher, and I teach at a special needs school for kids 3 through 21. And we actually have students that are on medical marijuana for their seizures.
Fantastic.
And you have these kids that were having 7, 8, 9 seizures a day that haven't had a seizure in 2 years.
Whoa!
Wow, that's awesome.
And these babies that are having these seizures, after they have a seizure, they are absolutely exhausted. So they're not available to learn. They're sleeping for the next 3-4 hours. And so we have seen huge improvements because of it.
Look at that.
There you go.
That's amazing.
That's a success story. Thank you, Sarah. That's great to hear. Yeah, that's the genesis of this whole conversation with this 12-year-old girl that was suing Sessions, was that her quality of life was completely turned around because of this. I mean, you think she's going to take on the attorney general when she's having seizures? No. And I'm glad she brought up that point about seizures, that I don't know anybody with seizures, but from stuff that we've read and Josh has done stories, that you don't just pop out of a seizure and keep on keeping on. It's a day ruiner. It shuts you down. You're exhausted. You're sometimes confused. You need some time to recover. And now these kids that she's teaching in young teens and, you know, late teens, their quality of life is through the roof. I'm still pissed about the gun stuff. I'm still like, Scott, I need your Christmas gift back. Give it back to me because I need you to have a medicinal marijuana card. Let's go to Sean in Harford County. Sean, thank you for holding, buddy.
Hey, how's it going, everybody?
Are you,
especially
you, Spiegel?
Hey, good form, Sean. Good form.
Thank you. My question actually has to do with a little bit with the disabilities. I actually have what's called organic brain disorder.
Okay.
And I also suffer from depression. I don't know what medical marijuana could do for that. And I do appreciate you taking my call.
Our pleasure, buddy.
Absolutely. I am not sure about the brain disorder that you have, but we'd be happy to set up an appointment with our clinical director, who's a nurse practitioner. He's been practicing for a number of years and is very well familiar with particular disorders and the alignment of strains along with them. I do know that is very helpful for depression, and sometimes you can dose someone or titrate someone with depression, and you can just give them an initial dosage that will actually reset something inside their body called the endocannabinoid system. And you may not need to be on it long term. It might just be able to give you that little reset.
If someone wants to get a hold of you to set up a consultation like that, how do they do that?
Go to www.cih.institute, mm-hmm. and enter in the contact us form, and we will reach out to you and set up a consultation.
Hey, you said something that just jumped out at me real quick, and we're going to jump in a second. Thank you to everyone that's called. If we can't get to your calls, we'll have Lee up again soon. Hey, you know anything about that ayahuasca? Like the stuff that resets your brain a little? You heard about that?
They're sending cats south of the border. Stuff?
No, is that the stuff that'll like literally control alt delete your brain? Where they say, hey, there's therapies that'll get you off of opiate addiction and heroin addiction and stuff like that. But then they got this stuff that damn near makes your brain forget it was ever even addicted. It sounds nuts. Is that what you're talking about?
I think ayahuasca is different from the kratom stuff, but I've been seeing that kratom, it's a plant also.
Mm-hmm.
And people are sending it over here and it does something with the reset. And people are microdosing with shrooms now.
Yeah, baby.
Yeah, I've heard about it. Well, they're actually putting shrooms in pill form now, and they're putting people like in a room and they're covering their eyes, and I think it's helping them get off cigarettes or something, or what was it? But shrooms are like now being used regularly like in pill form by real, you know, medical professionals.
I think we'll start seeing shrooms be passed, legalized in those states that originally legalized.
Leah Heiss. To help with depression. I know that. Yeah.
That sounds incredible. I think you holler at me when there's medicinal margaritas and I'm kicking open that front door. Chesapeake Institute of Health. Leah, thank you so much for joining us again. If anybody wants to get a hold of you, if you have questions, anything like that, where do they grab a hold of you?
www.cih.institute.
Thank you so much, Leah.
We now take you behind the curtain with Justin Scott and Spiegel on 98 Rock.
Well, look who we ran into. Early in the week, God, I think it was Monday as a matter of fact, we talked to a dude, and I'm going to try and pronounce his name properly, Ed Witanowski.
Witanowski.
And we're trying to look this guy up on social media. We couldn't find him. This guy seems to be a ghost online, but he reached out to us and specifically Scott to say, hey, I know Scott. We used to work together at a job that you had very briefly. Now, you'll hear in the clip coming up, we reach out. We have a great laugh. He's got nothing but nice things to say about you. And after talking to him, did it shake loose any memories?
No.
Anything from him? Nothing.
No.
You think he's bummed out at all that he remembered you in such detail and you just didn't remember a moment?
Yeah, he sent me some photos and it's kind of coming back to me. It was a real quick, like 3 months in my life. And I was very like, I just graduated college and I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. And I was thinking about sending some applications to like New York City to like some talk shows or something. Cause I majored in communications and I just was valet parking cars for a summer. And it was nice to hear him have such nice things to say about me. It was a little taken back by that. Because you don't know. You don't know what kind of impression you make on people or leave on people.
Good point.
And, he seemed like those are the kind of dudes that were on Long Island that I grew up with. You know, we get a bad rap a lot of times, but he was just a good dude. You could tell he was a good dude, funny dude. And had a lot of nice things to say, and it took me back, man. It was weird. You know, all these memories, when they just sit in your brain somewhere. Mm-hmm. And
they're logged somewhere, and you don't have the ability to, like, consciously access them.
Right,
but
until something kind of blows some dust off of them, and you go, whoa, wait a minute.
I remember this.
Yeah, the worst is when you're laying in bed at night, and for whatever reason, you go down, like, a nostalgia trip, and like next, and you're just kind of like going back through your timeline and weaving through it. Ever happened to you?
Yeah, all the time.
And I have mine. I only do that with regret.
Yeah, exactly.
I do those with things that I've done to people and feel like a complete. I have sat in bed before and woke up buck by going, oh God.
Like sometimes it gets so bad you have to like get out of bed and like take some deep breaths to like
walk
regain
it off. Oh, dude, I've had regret showers before. I'm gonna see if I can wash off the memory of this horrible thing I did 10 years ago. And also, a fun aside from this break you'll hear coming up, we might need to dig deeper into Jewish country clubs where all the caddies are getting yelled at and no one's tipping. Yeah, Josh, I saw you kind of latch onto this factoids during this where you found that they weren't allowed to tip and there was a lot of yelling.
Yeah, I just like stereotyping my people. But I'm sure it happens at a lot of country clubs.
If you're a member of a Jewish country club, we encourage you to add to the quality of your clientele by inviting Josh Spiegel to join your ranks. Hear about it now on Behind the Curtain. We talk to an old coworker of Scott's by the name of Ed.
So,
Last week, I get an email just out of the blue from, it was actually from our, it came to the studio line, I guess, the studio at 98online.com. You can text that at any time, and it goes to a whole bunch of people.
A lot of people. So if you ever pitch a bitch through that studio line, know that like 40 people see it.
And it says, it's Scott Reardon from Long Island originally. I think I worked with him at a country club in Nassau County, unless it's his doppelganger. Can you please let me know? So I wrote the guy back and I said, that's me. I graduated college in 99 and I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life.
Mm-hmm.
So I got back home and I said, well, damn, what now?
Got to make that paper.
And my buddy Mike, shout out Mike, I know you're listening, Mike Osicki, was a lifeguard at the country club, and he got me a gig valet parking cars at the country club. Jewish country club, speak shout out.
Oh, my God.
Shout out to the tribe.
Wow. That must have been an expensive membership.
You'll be receiving a letter in a few days.
And we were told that in no way, shape, or form were you ever allowed to accept any tips.
What?
Whoa.
Yeah, it was. I remember that.
So. Not like you would have gotten that. Ian.
No, right, exactly.
Jesus. Cash or flesh.
I wrote back to the guy, and he said that he worked there back in the day. He said he'd been listening to the show religiously for the last year and decided to see what the heck we look like. He went onto the website and saw the photos and was like, what the hell? I think I know that guy. And now joining us on the phone is Ed. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
How you doing? Whoa, listen to that. Oh, what's up, man?
How's everybody doing?
We're good. I don't know how much you want to tell us about yourself, Ed, because you gave me some little tidbits as to who you are and what you do, but can I say what you do?
Black ops assassin, deep state cover.
Oh, sure.
He is a state police sergeant.
My Shout man.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
I don't, I'll be honest, Ed, I don't really remember you.
Hey, that's okay.
I don't know how else to say you. It. So, explain. So, I got a job over the summer just valet parking cars there. I think I was there from maybe like June until August, September, and then I moved back up to Albany and started producing the radio show up there. I valet parked. We sat in that little booth up there. Now, what were you doing there, Ed? Were you a valet parker with me?
Yeah, man. We sat in that same booth. There was a good-looking blonde girl that worked there.
I remember her.
A guy named Rick. And, you know, every job I've had, there's always been at least one entertaining person. And you were one of them, man. And
Scotty!
You always had that. Huh? You know, you always used to say to everybody, whether it was the members or the workers, you said, that's enough out of you. I remember that was your phrase. Yes.
He still does that, Ed. That is his thing. Changed. That's amazing. Is he telling people that are like millionaires and well-to-do and upper crustians of society, hey, that's enough out of you?
Yeah, this was the typical type of Caddyshack 100%. Atmosphere, but really not as funny.
Yeah, it was a fun, cool gig. Yeah, so I don't want to like. But I guess that's a fun little tidbit. What else do you remember about me?
That's
like
great.
That was a just out of college, 21-year-old, 2-year-old Scott. Any other memory?
What was Scott looking like? Describe him to me physically.
He was the same as he looks now. You know, a good looking, taller guy with the dark black hair.
Ooh,
yeah, that's him. Shout out. That's still him. Mm.
You know, and we had to hustle a lot because it got busy there. We had to park a lot of cars and get yelled at by a lot of the members.
Yeah, we had to run up that big hill. There was a big hill because, like, the front door was down a hill. You'd run down a hill, and you had to run all the way up the hill to the parking lot, get the car, swing it on down.
And what the hell's the deal with the tipping thing,
yeah,
man?
Well, it was a Jewish country club. It was part of their dues. They didn't want to tip. Do you remember the one woman that would show up every morning? I think she had, like, if I remember correctly, it was a Mercedes-Benz, and it might have been, like, white or silver. Every day, her car reeked of weed.
Yeah.
And if you pulled out the ashtray, there were roaches in there. She would get in her car and smoke a joint on the way to the country club.
That's awesome.
Do you remember that?
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes.
I remember that.
There was one guy that had a Porsche that was amazing. It was like a 1970s, like old school Porsche. It was like white and blue. It was like a Porsche Carrera.
Uh-huh.
I remember I got to drive that one time. That was a lot of fun.
Devorah Goldfarb stopping by. Devorah. I'm fascinated with the whole no tip thing. I get the whole thing. Obviously, it's a part of their dues. Did anybody ever slide you any secret cash? Did anybody ever do the handshake?
I was too afraid to take it. I didn't want to lose my
job. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I was an 18, 19-year-old kid, so I took it. It was beer money.
My man.
And you said the members would yell at you guys, Ed?
Yeah, all the time. I used to caddy there, too, and I got tired of that gig. Because I never found the ball. I always lost it. The old ladies would always yell at me.
That's amazing.
Yeah, the old ladies were nasty, man.
And I can't find it nowhere.
Rich Jewish. This was the North Shore of Long Island. This was old, rich Jewish people that just didn't have the time of day for us, you know, normal civilians.
We were the executive parking was the name of the company. We were the green shirts. The rival was Parking Systems, the red shirts.
This is Orna Silverstein calling, and I'm sick of this kid, Ed. I hire him to look for my balls. He never finds the balls. And I can't even do it anymore.
I don't like to hear this about my people. They look they make all of us look bad.
We love him.
I mean, I'm buying brand new Titleists, and he's just losing them in the twill grass.
No excuse for that.
None.
Now, Ed will tell you, when you grow up on Long Island, it's all the same. It's just your Long Island people. Like, half my friends were Jewish. I was Italian. It didn't matter. It was just...
Well, plus they're country club people, too. What do you expect?
Yeah, that was more
exactly.
It.
I don't think it's Jewish. It's a country club person.
Right. It was Jewish.
Ed, send me some photos, dude. I can't find you on any of the social media or anything like that. I want to get eyes on you, and I'll shout you out. Maybe we'll grab a beer or something. Hey, where are you living? So, wait, how did you end up in Maryland?
The job. I needed a job. So back in 2004, I started looking, and here I am 13 years later.
Look at this guy. Yeah, Sergeant, state police.
And you're one of those dudes. Are you one of those badasses that stands in the road and just points at you and then points at the curb?
Over.
Move over.
Not anymore. No, I'm in a different unit now, but I used to do that.
You were the dude that just walked out in the middle of a major highway with like your crazy cop pants on, like, hey, going too fast. Get into the shoulder. I know Scott Reed.
And real quick, Ed, we were just talking about this the other week. How satisfying is that to pull over some jackass weaving down 95?
It depends. It is satisfying, but also it kind of is a wake up call because especially on those roads and the officers that have been struck and either seriously injured or killed, it's a real wake up call. So. Especially down there, we try to really increase the presence just to curb that from happening again.
Well, Trooper Ed, it's been great getting to hear old tales told of Scott from yesteryear.
Summer of 99 at Cold Spring Country Club. Who would have thought it? Shout out to my buddy Mike, who was the lard there.
What's up?
Shout out to the cute blonde chick that used to work there. There was a guy, remember the guy? Who was the other guy? Some guy had, this was when the Nextels were real big,
Where you at?
And he would next tell like his dad all the time, and then he had a Toyota Supra, and it was the sickest car I've ever seen. I remember that guy.
I think that was Rick, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't remember.
All right, man. Well, hey, dude, this has been great catching up, brother. Don't be a stranger. Thank you for listening to the show. Tell everyone in the state troopers we love them. We appreciate the hell out of them. Stay safe. Thank you for
thank you, man.
Out there doing the Lord's work. And Ed, we'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Ed.
There he goes.
Yeah, that was nice.
That was very pleasant.
This is Behind the Curtain with Justin Scott and Spiegel on 98 Rock.
All right, you're going to hear an interview coming up that we did on Wednesday with Madam Mayor Catherine Pugh that, much like prior interviews with prior mayors, we started with the best of intentions. We always start these interviews with couth. And with respect and with manners. And sometimes they don't end that way. Now, this one, I believe, ended far better than some of our post-riot conversations with SRB. And some genuine emotion, some genuine tears. And Scott, you were the one that I think kind of rolled the necessary grenade into it, because as you'll hear coming up, we weren't given a lot of time to ask the questions or make the statements that we would have liked to have, because she was sort of pitching us, selling us on her policies and not leaving us a lot of time to respond or ask follow-up.
Yeah, and for at least for me, I kind of you did like a little introduction about, hey, you know, great to see that a real person is, you know, real in front of the people and away from the people. We've had some moments with you and you're real. And then Spiegel kind of followed up. And then I tried to jump in and be like, hey, you know, what are we doing here? When is this going to get better? And she immediately cuts me off. You'll hear it, and says, you're hurting right now. You're hurting right now. I can't, you know, you're basically saying you can't speak right now because you're hurting.
This was during the moving out of the city. That was
when this
was
right at the very beginning. This was like the first two or three minutes. Yeah. And I'm just like, so she shuts me down, goes on this long rant. And then it was like long rant after long rant. It was very like politico speak, very. And I was just kind of, I was over here like kind of rolling my eyes like. And somebody brought up a great point. Like, it wasn't a dialogue. It wasn't open. It wasn't a discussion. It was just this, like, she came in here with an agenda to shut us down, speak as long as she could. And in doing so, we wouldn't be able to ask questions, wouldn't be able to ask hard questions, and she wouldn't have to answer hard questions if she just kept talking. And that's what she was trying to do. And at that point, I had just gotten frustrated. And look, was it my finest moment? No, but I think it got us to a place that we needed to get to, and it was a little difficult getting there, and it was a little awkward and clunky and maybe disrespectful, but
it was rude,
okay? Like, maybe it was rude, but when is rude being rude like such a crime? I don't understand that. Like, why do people get so, okay, I was a little bit rude. So what? Move on. Like, this, sometimes it needs to get rude and it needs to get heated and it needs to get weird and it needs to get awkward if we want to further the conversation.
Well, hear it now. We had a conversation for the ages. Is it up at 98online.com? And we hope this makes its way around. And read some of our Twitter mentions, Twitter feed at JSS98Rock. We've continued to have a dialogue with the mayor. We believe the mayor will be back up. It was very, very necessary and was very, very unique. One of the only type of interviews that you will get on a show like this with a person like our Madam Mayor, Catherine Pugh.
I was mortified.
So was I. Trust me.
Good morning, Justin Scott Spiegel, and joined in studio, just as we'd promised, Madam Mayor Catherine Pugh joins us. Good to see you again, Madam Mayor.
Good morning. Good morning.
Last time we saw you was at the Baltimore Running Festival. You're out there, all ready to go.
Thank you.
Had the sneakers, had the tights on, had a great time.
Ran the first leg of the team marathon.
Was that 7 miles? 6 miles?
Just
about.
Well, they would want me to say it's 5.8 miles.
5.8. We'll round it up to six for you.
Up the hill.
I had interns carry me to the car.
Meanwhile, all the way up.
You're running.
Since then, I've joined a running club. You've inspired me.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good. I'm very proud.
Did
very
5 miles yesterday.
I've done jiu-jitsu twice and have been choked out twice. So I wish I was running. Right.
I had yesterday, you know what a chocolate cigar is?
That's not right.
No.
That is so wrong.
No, not smoking it. You know, you've never seen a chocolate?
No.
In a bakery?
No.
I go to the bakery every day.
Is that your training regimen?
The question should be, how many steps has he taken towards the bakery?
Good point.
And how many steps does he take leaving the bakery?
Well, I had two chocolate cigars. I'm not proud of it.
Oh, wow. See's Candy makes chocolate cigars. And
get him a Fitbit. Get him a Fitbit.
Yeah, well, Christmas, Hanukkah's coming. Madam Mayor, we're very happy that you're able to join us. We obviously wish it was under more positive circumstances, like at the Baltimore Running Festival. It was a great time getting to see you there.
Yep.
And I obviously wanted to start off this conversation by paying you a compliment, and it's not one that I'm, you know, paying you to blow smoke. I mean this. I've said this earlier before you're on the air, and even before today, was that, you know, we've had relationships with politicians in this town before that it's a real Jekyll and Hyde thing. We'll talk to them on the microphone, and even their body language, demeanor, everything is, oh, yes, we're very excited about the city. The minute the microphone turns off and it's cold, icy, disappear, doesn't want to make eye contact, yada. I won't get into specifics, but the compliment that I've paid is that, you know, the mayor that we talk to on the microphone is the same person that we talk to off. And, you know, I got a good good dose of that at that Baltimore Running Festival. Just kind, conversational. You talked to everyone that came up to you. Didn't seem like you paid anybody any lip service. It doesn't seem like you're putting on a front. True blue, as I said, someone that seems like you do genuinely care about a city that right now could use some caring for.
Well, we need a lot of caring for him. But let me just say thank you for the compliment. And I am sad that we are here under the problems that we're facing. And we are facing some serious problems, gun violence being among the worst problem that the city suffers from. And shootings, and I tell people, I don't, you know, that every time somebody's shot, mm-hmm. every time somebody's killed, every time somebody's cut, every time a fire breaks out, it comes to this phone. The phone rings. And so I'm very much aware and in tune with the violence that's taking place in our city, which is why I spend time on the streets, walking through neighborhoods and communities, riding through some, concerned about many. And one of the reasons I talk about the need to and am expanding safe streets is because, you know, you talk about targeting violence in areas that are violent, but the reality is everybody in the city deserves a safe street. And so we're looking at expanding safe streets across the entire city, because when people talk about zoning areas where and targeting, and I'm saying, well, you know, if you're targeting this area, then it's going to move over here or it's going to move over there. And neighborhoods that have not experienced violence begin to experience violence as well. And so I just believe that we've got to expand safe streets across the entire city so that everybody feels the same safety and gets the same attention.
Do you have a relationship with, I believe it's Ben Jealous, formerly from the NAACP? He was on a recent program of ours. I think he's running for governor at some point. Mm-hmm. He was just another local politician that he educated me about the safe streets program and how it's in four neighborhoods right now.
But it needs to be in every neighborhood.
It needs to be in every neighborhood.
It has to be in every neighborhood. And again, you know, that's why we're expanding it. That's why we're going to put more money in it, because it has to be. Every neighborhood deserves to be safe.
Can you explain what the Safe Streets program is for those that don't know?
Safe Streets basically targets and puts resources and tries to make sure that we've got people on the streets who are disruptors of violence. It also targets resources to those particular areas. For example, every morning at 8 a.m., we've got all of the agencies meeting along with the police department and those commanders in those targeted areas. And so what I've said is that every commander needs to be there so that we can target every specific area, so that we know when lights are out, so that we know when alleys are filled, so that we know when people are standing on corners in large numbers, and that we become disruptors and you know, try to curb the violence in those communities and neighborhoods. And I just believe that every neighborhood deserves the same kind of attention.
And Mayor Pugh, you said a couple of weeks ago that crime is out of control mm-hmm. in the city. Those were your exact words.
Yes.
And it surprised me that you said that. I mean, not because crime isn't out of control, but you don't really hear a politician saying that, admitting that. But you talked about how, like you just said, that you're meeting every day with dozens of agency heads
twice
in
a day,
the city.
Actually.
Yeah. So with crime out of control, and I think that was before the police detective was murdered. And that was before the
Alex Robleski.
Yes. A friend of Scott was shot and killed at Locust Point. Why should people who live in the city now not be packing their bags and heading for the suburbs as fast as possible if crime is out of control?
Let me just say that's not what we're experiencing. What I'm saying is that...
Oh, it's happening.
So what I'm saying, I know you're upset.
No, I'm not. I mean,
you are upset. And, you know, it's happening, but people also moving into the city. You know, we had 7,000 new people move into the city. So, you know, I'm looking at the data every single day. And I would be upset if I were you as well. But let me just say, I'm upset every single time this phone rings, every time some... You
so
know,
then what are we going to do? What are we doing? Safe Streets is great, Madam Mayor.
So
this city is it's slipping away. It's,
well, let me
it's
just say
slipping
this.
Into...
Let me just say this, because you're angry. So why don't, if you want to know what I'm doing, which is why I'm here, as people know, I don't run away from the media. Every Wednesday, I hold a press conference mm-hmm. to bring people up to date, to let them know what I'm doing, because I took this responsibility to help make this city better, and I work every single day to make that happen. And so when I came into office, Alex, You should know that, you know, there was a consent decree that had not been crafted. And so I got that done. There was a school system that needed $190 million. So I got that done. There's a police department that's positions have been frozen for 2 years. And so the attrition rate, officers leaving the police department faster than we're able to hire them. Do you know how long it takes to get a police officer on the streets of our city? Do you have any idea?
How long, Madam Mayor?
No, I'm just asking you. Do you know?
No, I don't know. Of course.
Okay,
why would I know that?
Let me explain it to you.
Okay. That's all great.
Let me just say, because you, first of all, everybody wants a police officer on every corner. So 2 years ago, we froze police positions in our city, talking about saving cost. But the reality is that you had more police officers leaving, and then you froze positions. So it takes 9 months to go through a background check. It takes 10 and a half months, which is the mandated training period for a police officer that they have to go through. So that's 19 and a half months. So the first thing I did was focused on how do we get more police, unfroze every single position and said hire as many police officers as quickly as we can, which is what we're doing. But what happened, I looked at the 9.5 months of background check. Are you kidding me? I said, let's cut that time down. So we cut it down to 6 months. Now we cut it down to 3 months, but you don't get to cut down to 10.5 months of training. So it now takes about 13.5 months for the average, because you can't change that.
Yeah. Let me ask you, as the government tries to deal with and get a handle on the violence, what, you know, people feel helpless. Who live in the city, who work in the city, what can the average citizen or person who works in the city do on their own to protect themselves? Because the government can't be everywhere at once.
Well, but we can do things to make it better.
But what advice would you give to?
First of all, I think we've got to do our part. You know, 77,000 lights in the city. And we're changing them out because they don't brighten the city the way that they should. 6,000 new lights that we've put on, that we've changed out completely, put new lights in. So adding to the 70-some-odd thousand lights, because there are areas of the city that are just too dark. So I've ordered us to change out all of those lights in the city. I think the thing that we need to focus on is, among the things that we have to focus on, is making sure that our young people are in school, in after-school programs. We opened up our rec centers on Friday nights till 11 o'clock, and then on Saturday nights till midnight. We are also putting STEAM into those centers to make sure that we have activities. This last week, we had about 2,000 young people in the rec centers throughout the city. So we're trying to brighten up the streets. We're going to put more police officers. I've also identified another 100 positions in the police department that are civilianized, that we're going to take police officers that are sitting in civilian positions and putting them on the streets so that we can have more of a presence of police officers in our communities throughout the city. And so, you know, I know people are upset. I know people get angry, but I have to stay focused on doing what's necessary and important to move the city forward. And you're absolutely right. There are people who are living in fear, and we want to erase those fears. And so, you know, we're trying to create additional presence, programming, educational programming, working with the homeless, getting homeless people up off the streets of our city.
Is this going to take years to fix?
My prayer is that it doesn't. Getting the police officers on the streets. As I said, we've got a class graduating in February. We've got another class that just got their badge and gun ceremony, so that's about another 66. We've got to hire like about 400 police officers, and you can't freeze positions. And we tried to pass, in fact, when the New York police officer who wrote the article in the Sun papers about what needs to be done, we checked most of the things that he asked that we do, we're doing. But the other issue is getting guns off the streets of our city. We have too many guns on the streets of this city. I put forth legislation that got watered down because I think that there ought to be mandatory for folks who have come in contact with the criminal justice system. And you will see 89% of the individuals who commit crimes in the city have been in contact with the criminal justice system 9 to 11 times.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to address. When does we have Madam Catherine Pugh in studio? And when does it just seems that, you know, the legislation and the judicial system, a lot of these people are repeat offenders and they're back on the streets just to commit these crimes again. And then, you know, when something horrific happens, you look at their record and you say, how is this person even out on the street to commit this atrocity? And when do we get tougher with that and get these people off the street and keep them off the street?
So the legislation that I put forward required mandatory jail time, and the advocates for the bill weren't there. The advocates against the bill won out, and so the bill was watered down. The bill that I put forth required mandatory sentencing, and that did not pass, and so it is left to the criminal justice system, which I don't control, the judges, to give people sentences instead of suspending sentences and putting them back out on the streets.
And the Safe Streets program that we talked about earlier, when I was educated about it last week, the four neighborhoods in question, Cherry Hill, McKeldry Park, Park Heights, and Sandtown Winchester, it does appear to work, and it appears that there are hundreds and hundreds of days that will go by without a firearm homicide in those neighborhoods where they're at. Now, as you said earlier, they're in just far too few neighborhoods. There needs to be more. And one of the things that I find interesting about this program is that the people that are involved in it have prior street experience. This isn't, some Ivy League educated guy out there, you know, with a folder in his hand. No, this is like people with former gang involvement, former criminal history, mm-hmm. people that were victims of shootings, that people right. that were part of the drug trade.
We these call
are
them
people
disruptors.
That, they disruptors that Absolutely. Are trying to undo their wicked ways and turn these around. Why can't we get more than just these four neighborhoods right now? Because it seems the numbers are there that it does work.
But that's what I just said. We're putting additional monies in Safe Streets because I said the city needs to be covered citywide, not just for particular neighborhoods, because we've shown the data. And so not only are we not just waiting, we're actually looking at expanding that, and we're putting additional dollars into that particular program and expanding it citywide. I mean, that is a high priority for us. And what that means is that we're looking at an additional, I think, five programs across the city so that every single neighborhood is covered. But I can tell you that there are groups that are out there working with us. I'm out there. In fact, when we were expanding one particular area of the city and working with the Nation of Islam, they said, look, you don't have to come out. I'm out there at 9:30 at night and 10 o'clock in neighborhoods. I'm walking the streets. I'm seeing the activity that's taking place. I tell people I don't take this lightly. You know, my day starts at 4 o'clock, 5 a.m. in the morning, and it doesn't end until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning because I'm that concerned and that focused on these problems.
You're only getting 2 hours of sleep?
2 to 3 hours.
Oh, man.
But people
well, let's
know.
Hope it pays off. I mean, we'll see, right? He's like you said, it's going to take time. And I don't know. It's just hard to remain hopeful. That's all. You know, it's hard to
know that we want
see the
to.
Light. And, you know, I love this city. I've said that a million times. So let me talk. You've talked enough. I've lived here for 12 years. I mean, you haven't had we haven't really talked. We haven't had a chance to answer a lot of questions.
Question. I always like to answer the question.
I wasn't a question. It was a statement. I
no,
said
I was saying
it's
to him.
Hard
I was
to, it's hard to remain hopeful. We all love this city. Why are you looking over at him?
Scott's a little.
I'm just trying to talk. I apologize, Madam Mayor, but I was just trying to make a statement, and I didn't mean to say you've talked enough. I just meant it's now time for me to make a statement, and I was just trying to talk about the hope of the city, and it's hard to remain hopeful, and we have a lot of people in this city who are I just as much as you're ingrained in the city, I'm ingrained in the city as well. I have a lot of family and friends that live in the city. That don't feel safe and they don't feel hopeful. So I said it's in time. We'll see. And hopefully all these changes that you make and are trying to make will pay off. Because this is a great city. I love this city. I love the people of this city. And hopefully it turns around. And I apologize if I stepped out of line there. But like you said, it's a very passionate issue.
The wounds are still fresh in here, Madam Mayor. And we do apologize. And we do appreciate you taking the time. It's just... You know, we want to believe as much as we know you believe that the city can recover. We want it to. And we believe that your policy should be, funded and given the patience and given the time to succeed,
so
can succeed. Scott made a point last week. He said something that I think this will resonate with you. He said he never thought he'd be someone that knew someone that was murdered.
Yeah, it's
and it hung heavy in the air with us.
I mean, I can't speak for Scott, but I, you know, don't take personally.
I apologize.
He's very angry. Just last week, his friend was murdered, and he's just very, very emotional right now. So it's nothing personal.
And so I spent.
Now I can see it in your face. Now this is it's tough.
Yeah, but I'm hopeful.
I know, and I am too. It's just so hard.
When you come into a position and things are frozen.
I know.
And people don't understand what it takes to get a police officer on the street.
I couldn't imagine being in your position.
When you have a budget process that doesn't work, and so you change the budget process so that your priorities are met, which is this budget process coming up. When you come into a city and schools are don't have resources,
yeah,
and the city school budget is $1.8 billion, and yours is $2.8 billion for the entire city.
Mm-hmm.
And you got a police force that is does not have enough police officers on the street. I mean, all you have to do is do the numbers.
Yeah, nice.
If you're losing 16 police officers a month or 20 police officers a month, that tells you you're going to be 300-400 police officers under. Everybody deserves to have the same kind of coverage in every single community. So what do? You say unfreeze. January, unfreeze all those positions. Make sure we hire as many as you can.
Yeah.
And what I'm trying to show you is that
I'm hearing it. I'm hearing everything you're saying.
21 months before you would have seen a police officer on the street, a new police officer on the street. So you go inside of the police department and you find 100 positions and you say, put those officers on the street. And then you say, shorten that. You can't shorten the training process. So then shorten the process by which you evaluate a police officer, screen them, and get them on the street. We've cut
Madam
it down
Mayor,
from
I'm
9 months.
It all.
We
Let's
cut
hope.
It down from 9 months to 3 months.
Yeah.
And three quarters of the time that we've been able to do because of the smart people that we've hired, the technology that we're putting in place. In 1998, they put computers in police cars in Prince George's County, in Montgomery County. We didn't have them. So what did I do? I went to the governor, got $2 million to put technology in our police cars so that they could respond more quickly. You know, I look at the lack of technology, the lack of investment, and we sit there and talk about cutting budgets when, in fact, we should be talking about expanding budgets.
I'll tell you what,
sure we have police officers on our streets, that we pass laws that make sense, that get criminals off of our streets. I know the numbers like the back of my hand. As much as you're hurting, I hurt every single day for every single person.
The passion you have displayed here this morning and the love that I can see you have for the city is like something we haven't seen in the past.
I'll go back to my very first statement when you first came into the studio. We spoke with the former mayor and former politicians that came in, and it sounded like they were reading off of cue cards. And if you're not looking on LiveWire right now, I'm looking at the pain in your eyes, and I'm reading your body language. And this is, I'm not speaking as a mayor. I'm not speaking as a woman, as a resident, a person that cares about this city. I mean it. I'm reading on your face right now.
Yeah,
this is not lip service. This isn't political grandstanding. This isn't you on a soapbox. This is you, someone that wants to fix the city. And I think this mutual hurt, I think it needs to get awkward. What Josh said at the beginning of the conversation, you don't hear politicians say crime is out of control, shootings are out of control. You're honest in that regard. And I don't think there's enough honest discussions like this. There doesn't need to be, pardon my language, but just kissassery amongst people that are, you know, tell us about the Strawberry Festival coming up and all this. We don't need that. We need conversations like this. This is going to get it fixed, and this is going to keep it honest. And we appreciate you for keeping honest. And this is not comfortable, but we're not in a comfortable situation.
No.
The
so
city
thank
is
you.
Not comfortable. Yeah. I'm not comfortable. You know, I look at when 65 people laid in front of City Hall because they wanted to demonstrate about homelessness, and I was, you know, they'll be okay. No, they won't be okay. So what do? I go outside. I talk to the 65 individuals. I move them to a place so they could get up off the streets. they've been moved into, the women are living in a dormitory style facility. The mothers with children, we got into homes right away, you know, into apartments and homes. Right, we've opened up 75 new slots for homeless people. We're looking at creating 300 homes for the homeless in the next year. So, you know, I tell folks, I've looked at it not just through the lens of, you know, what the budget looks like. What does the city need? So if you ask me, for example, what is it going to cost in homelessness in our city? I'll tell you, it's $350 million. If you ask me, what is it going to cost to redo the city in terms of the boarded up houses and so forth that also help create the crime in our city, that's another $850 million. And I tell my folks, don't think about it in terms of, you know, what your budget is right now, because I'm going to go out and find it. When I'm talking to the Ford Foundation or the philanthropic community, I'm asking for help because the city can't do it by itself. And that's why everybody has to be a part of this. And so when I came in the office, I said, the city's dark. The neighborhoods that are just too dark, change these lights out. I'm not asking you how much it costs because I'm going to go find the money to make it happen. But what I'm asking folks to do is to not give up and not to not have hope. And I understand the pain and suffering because, again, you know, I suffer every single time someone is hurt in this city. You know, to hold the hand of a wife whose husband is killed or shot or whatever that is, and to stay there 24 hours to make sure that she's comfortable and understands, and to sit there and talk to the doctors and say, please just tell her the truth so she can know what she has to deal with. Unless you've had someone, as you've had, go through this, then you don't understand the pain. And that's why when I look at the city, I look at it from a total perspective. And when we say safe streets in particular neighborhoods, I say safe streets for the entire city.
Madam Mayor Catherine Pugh, thank you for being a human first and a politician second. And thank you for taking the time here with us this morning.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
It's time to go Behind the Curtain with Justin Scott and Spiegel on 98 Rock.
Hey, it's Behind the Curtain with Justin, Stacy, and Joe Robinson. Thanks for stopping in a second day in a row, because this is a live program and definitely not recorded. So if you're hearing this now and you go to LiveWire and you don't see us, it's because the cameras are frozen and not that we're recording this at 9:20 on Friday. We had a conversation yesterday, 24 hours ago, about Thanksgiving dinner how we spent it, how it went, and now that we're here and we can speak a little bit more honestly on the weekend.
Yeah, nobody's listening.
No one's listening. How much would you just love to do nothing and end the ruse of pretending you're excited to see all these people? You see the miserable faces gathered around the table, and you just want to raise your hand and go, no one feels like being here, right? Like, let's all come from a point of honesty. No one outside of the 90-year-olds who are just excited to be drawing breath. No one wants to see anybody else.
That's why I worked yesterday.
Yes.
If I'm being honest, I don't feel that way.
No?
No,
really?
I don't. No, I look, well, I don't cook. I'm not cleaning up.
But do you look forward to seeing all those people?
Yeah, I do.
Well, Joe, you don't like to be alone also.
No, I don't like that.
I think this goes to just your state of being, where I relish being alone. Right. Stace, I think you might be cut from a similar cloth. Like you actually are very, very social and very
personal. I like
personal
to be around people. That's true. But also, I mean, I'm seeing people that I don't see every day, right? My sisters, I don't see them every day.
Hell,
you know?
Yeah.
So it's cool to see them.
He is a much better person than we are.
You are a good person.
Please.
Clearly.
Open up the closet and see the skeletons fall out.
There's 90, I can mention 90% of my family, if I never saw again.
90%.
90%. If I never saw my dad and brother again, I might be upset. Anybody else? Take it or leave it, man. If I never saw them again, other than to put them in the ground and throw a rose on the
coffin. If you're listening right now, Schlegels, you know
dear Schlegels, if I never saw one of you again, I don't lose a minute of sleep.
Feelings mutual now.
Yeah, I bet. All right. And I sit there at these tables and I look around. Everyone's buried in their phones. The people that aren't like 90 are drinking to excess. Everyone else is just 90 and just excited that they haven't been forgotten by the hands of time and their bloodline.
Is it the fake conversation?
Oh, yeah. Having to pretend that the one 43-year-old guy in the family that works at like a scrapyard, you're like, oh, that sounds good. It sounds like you're doing well. Yo, you work there 2 days a month and, oh, you just got on a work release. No, that's good. That's good. Like, oh, we're all lying to each other. No one wants it. Their turkey is dry as hell. Oh, it's like chewing
it's
on
delicious.
Leather.
Delicious.
Turkey sucks.
This is the best thing ever.
Turkey is trash.
Fan. I'm a fan. Hey, just throw some gravy on there. It all works
out. You got to drown turkey in gravy. It's one of the reasons I have to just slather pumpkin pie and whipped cream to make it edible.
Yeah.
Turkey is, it's like eating awful chicken.
Yesterday, I didn't take the pumpkin pie, but I took a spoonful of Cool Whip.
Oh,
boom.
Yeah.
Right on the plate.
Oh, I'll murder that.
Just ate those chemicals and sugar.
Just
the boom.
Cool Whip.
Yeah. So just one little scoop, didn't go crazy.
Well, hear about it now. We had a Thanksgiving recap and a story about a performance with Joe Robinson and Die Laughing Productions that went horribly awry at one point, yet still a good show on Behind the Curtain. So you and I, this past weekend, Joe, did our Die Laughing Productions murder mystery. Shout out to everyone that came out in Vienna, Jam, and Java. And this one was an 80s themed one, entitled Back to the 80s. And so far, it's been probably one of our more, enjoyable ones to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's what's weird is that if you were born in 2003, as an example,
yeah.
You don't get any of the references. There's nothing there for you. But for some reason, I guess, parents that lived through the 80s, they want to kind of drag their kids through their own nostalgia. So, of course, it's adult themed. We try to make sure that people know. Don't bring your kids to this. It's going to be some horrific. They're going to learn some things if they come to this.
Yeah, we talk about sex acts and sex acts in an order that a doctor wouldn't recommend.
so I even got an email from the club 2 days before the show saying, "Hey, is this show appropriate for children?" Which we'd already discussed. Specifically a 7th grader. I said, no.
No, absolutely not.
No, you
not.
Can't
no.
bring a 7th grader. So when we showed up, it had occurred to me the club knew. Everybody knew this is an adult show. And in fairness, I didn't notice this until the beginning, or maybe they arrived late, but right up front, right front and center, there's a table of 8. There's one parent, I assume the chaperone,
mm-hmm.
and a bunch, and 7 kids.
Do you immediately feel uncomfortable?
No, because Justin's the one doing most of the work up there,
I'm
so
doing
he's the one.
Like 90% of the talking. And here's the thing, I rarely notice the front row. When you've done stand up, I do stand up. We did stand up on Wednesday. Thank you to everyone that came out to Ramstead. I tend to look at the back of the crowd forward. I don't like looking at the people in the front row because I don't want to see their beady eyes.
Yeah,
I don't
they see never their, stop like, staring.
They never stop staring. I don't want to see faces. If I can see a mass of people, I'm okay. If I can see individual eyes, I think to myself, you hate this. You don't want to be here. You're on your phone. You're making love to a chicken tender. You're not paying attention to me. So this table in question, I didn't see a single face. I tell you what I saw, though. I saw the back of their heads.
What happened was I was watching that table as the performance was going on, and I saw a lot of mouths agape. Like, is this mom? Or is this cool? Are we allowed to be hearing this? Well, there's a scene, or not a scene, or a part of the show where Eric Woodworth, shout out to Eric Woodworth, he's a man of a little bit larger carriage, right?
He's a hefty fella.
Matter of fact, if you saw JSS Uncensored, you saw him 3 times in his tidy whities.
He was one of our gigantic asses for the filthy ass trivia, where if one of us got a question wrong, the butt moved closer to our face, and whoever lost the trivia just had to basically place their face within a larger man's back end. He was one of the butts. He's a big dude.
But in Back to the 80s, Eric, he strips down to a leotard, and he dances the flash dance, the famous flash dance, where she pours the water on herself. He dances that dance in a leotard.
Made famous by Jennifer Beals.
Now, what he does is he gets up there, and he takes his shirt off. He's wearing the top part of a leotard. He's wearing pants. And I see him go to take his pants off, and the whole table looks at the only adult. He's like, is this happening right now? Well, one thing he'd never done before, he actually goes and buttons his pants back up. It's like, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to do this. So you see this look of relief, like, okay, that was a joke. Nope. Off they come. He's wearing nothing but a leotard. Up immediately. Boom. The entire table pops up, walks right out of the club. Now, since I'm such an old man, I tried to grab my phone to video because there's 8 people literally walking out in anger and disgust. and every other member of the audience has their cell phone out videoing.
Awesome.
So, but of course, you know, I'm such an old man. By the time I got it,
yeah,
they're past me. There's one phone still out. I didn't really get to capture.
Joe can't find the video app on his jitterbug. And Stace, you're
his flip.
You're a petite woman. You're very very tiny. This leotard that Eric's wearing would be tight on you.
Be snug.
You'd have to force yourself into this thing. And meanwhile, this guy is the size of Tony Siragusa.
Yeah.
He's huge. And I'm not seeing them get up and leave. I just come back on stage after the Flashdance dance, and I do notice that there's a huge table that's just missing. And we find out what happened. They botched the flyer or the ad. They
put all ages on there.
No, this is not all ages.
Which also screwed Justin over a little bit, because we have to pick a character during the show, Sloane from Ferris Bueller. Sloane. She, and what you're supposed to do is pick the most beautiful woman that you can find in the audience. And so I see this stunning girl. She comes in. It doesn't occur to me that she's not 18 because, you know,
thanks,
that's
bud.
How many, that's awesome. That's how old you have to be to be in there, right?
I'll see you soon, Weinstein.
Now,
hold a chair for me, CK. Maybe now, Spacey will go ahead and save me a spot at the prison lunch table.
This was very early on in the show, and, you know, I have a lot of roles to hand out. And as soon as I see this vision, I'm like, well, I'm going to give her the role of Sloane. We're not going to find a better-looking girl than her. But after I gave her the role, there's still 45 minutes before the show starts. She's in the hallway outside of the green room taking thousands and thousands of pictures with the girls that she's with.
She took enough selfies to cause a data overage. She was in that little cabal of hers in that corner, ripping off a trillion selfies. I'm like, what are you
doing? No exaggeration. They were there for 30 minutes.
And I mean, for 30 minutes, each time a slight facial change to it.
So at this point, I'm like, you know, I think I might have screwed Justin over here. I didn't say a word about it, though. I didn't.
No,
I don't want to stress him out.
Left
okay,
me swinging
got a
in
whole
the wind.
Show to do. Right.
Well, luckily for me, and this was just the fates intervening. She stood up, and I just see this beautiful individual standing at the back of the crowd, and I squint at. And one of the first things I say is like, "Man, you could either be 13 or 45." And she goes, "I'm 16."
Yeah.
Oh dear. Yeah. Okay. So any innuendo or untoward comments are gone. I'm immediately reading straight from the script. There's no more improving. There's no more sexual innuendo.
You're supposed to hit on her, like,
relentlessly.
Yeah, relentlessly. And then none of that happened.
Uh-uh. No, I immediately used to see me pull the thing up. So, dear Sloane, there was a murder here this evening. Do you have any insight as to what happened? Thank you so much for your interaction. Not a hint.
And Rob was saying, no, that's normal. It's just she's playing a high school student. She is a high school student. Justin's playing a high school student. Well, no, but there's Justin's really double her age.
Wow.
No,
I'm a senior citizen.
Reality enough.
No. Oh, and here's where let me put a heap and scoop of creepy on it. So we make the joke, oh my God, she's 16. We are going to be on the up and up from this point forward. And her parents were cool. We were dropping F-bombs beyond that. They didn't get up and walk like that other, you know, stuffy group of Duggars. But an audience member comes up and goes, hey, man, hey, look, you're okay, brother. Holds up his phone, and he has a list of the ages of consent throughout the country.
No, stop.
Why do you have, if that was saved on your phone?
That's creepy.
You're a son of a bitch. You're awful if that was saved
on
your phone.
What state am I in? All right,
all right, cool. Alabama, 11. Oh, okay. Cool. So, how was Thanksgiving? Stacey, we'll start with you. You worked.
Nothing really eventful for me.
No days off, Lynn.
I was working. You know what? Working days like that, it's just kind of a chill day, and we had football coming on, so we knew it was a shortened show.
Okay.
So it was good. It was good. Just kind of chilled here, went home. Family was out at you know, my dad's and then his mother-in-law's house, so had a nice quiet house.
Easy.
Had a little glass of wine.
Easy. A little alone time for you is the size of alone time. Small glass of wine for Stacey Lynn, if you've ever followed her on Facebook, is about the size of Tito Ortiz's head. It's real large. Joe, how about you, buddy?
One glass yesterday.
One glass?
Yes. That's all I did.
Yeah, 1 20-ounce glass. Joe?
Well, Well, I spent some time, you know, at three different places for Thanksgiving.
That sucks.
We started out at the girlfriend's parents' house, which was fun. Of course, we talked about Harvey Weinstein, Louis C.K., Kevin Spacey.
Nothing whets the appetite like uplifting. Sexual assault. Yeah.
Then we moved on to Trump.
Oh, good.
Awesome. So everything you're not supposed to do. Yeah, gotcha. I did a lot of
politics and rape. Pass
not
the
talking.
Just sat there.
You guys think there's
silence?
A God? Let's touch on that too.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, that was, I had a blast. I mean, not necessarily in that part, but no, the food was good. The people were good. No, not a whole lot of drama. Although at the first meal, we were talking about Trump at the other end of the table, you know, as far away as you could possibly get. Somebody else got a little wind of it and got extreme. I saw their face turn red. Like, maybe we should change the subject to what's your favorite type of stuffing, in bird or out of bird?
Yeah, Die Hard. Safer. Is it a Christmas film? Yeah, not gun rights or human trafficking. Sammy, you have one of the more peculiar diets here on the show. More often than not, we just find you, like, in the shadows eating small bags of cauliflower.
This is true.
Yeah, she just sprinkles Chinese five spice directly onto her tongue and growls. What was the Thanksgiving like in the Boots household?
Well, I actually traditionally go out. I don't eat at home.
What?
Well, Friendly Farms, I don't know if anybody's heard of it, but it runs in the family, so they serve like a Thanksgiving meal.
Is that like the no-kill turkey farm where they wait for the turkeys to commit suicide and then you're allowed to eat them?
You know what? I have no idea how they get their turkeys or what happens. They don't actually have turkeys on the property, so who knows where they come from. So I spent it there with some family, and then I went over to my girlfriend's family. And that's always an adventure as well.
Drama?
No drama. It's just, they're like the type of people that like to sit around the table and chat and play games.
Oh,
and
what a bunch of jerks.
God, what a bunch of savages.
Games. I don't want to play any games. I just want to watch football and hang out.
Yeah, you want to play. What games?
You want to play picture?
Like games that you actually have to think about. That's the hard part. Like,
Luke,
it's not even a simple
pursuit.
Board game, and it's not even Scrabble. It's something much worse. I don't even know what it was called. It's like Quiddler, or you have all these cards.
No drinking Jenga.
Guess which finger this is.
They're going to find out I'm stupid.
None of that. Dumb. So they were lovely people, though. So
Farts Against Humanity.
Did you guys win? Did you win the game?
No,
that's
we
probably
didn't.
Why you're bitter.
Yeah, I think so.
You would have been excited as hell if you would have made it to the top of that shoot.
Maybe that's why I never want to play games. It's because I always lose.
Oh, Sammy doesn't do well with board games. We need to have this. We need to have the Sammy Sarah JSS board game invitational.
Everybody's cool with the lifestyle choice at the table, or is it like a disgruntled aunt anywhere?
Oh no, that's my family, 100%. Her family's very open and very friendly.
Right. Really? Oh man, that's a bummer. In 2017. Get your head out of your ass, because we have there's a cousin in our family that's going through on Buck's side, that's going through transition, and like everyone is turbo cool with it. Almost they're being
over the top.
Too cool. Like, if you
to make a point,
like, yeah, exactly.
You know what? I've been thinking about doing that.
You know what? I think I want breasts also. Your bottom looks very nice, madam. Like, stop, dude. Just treat this individual like a normal person. Like, this person's going through transition. Couldn't be more just low-key about it, whatever, I'm living my best life, and everyone is like going over the top to be the first to compliment the dress or the nails or the
it
hair.
Is so brave.
Yeah, it's like, my God, like, no, they're just living their own life. Yeah, mine was, I wish I had a story to tell, man. Mine was normal. My dad brought gross ham. Right. Weird craft beer cousin never showed up, which was cool. I'm not sure if you heard that last week. There's a cousin that I have that just brings like homemade craft beer with
things floating in it.
Oh God, just like chunks sludge. Of floating in it. Yeah, it's the beer you can enjoy with a fork.
Did you have a combined, like, you and
There's
always stress there when you take the two families and you oil and water them.
I'm the only one that drinks to excess. Well, that's the only thing that sucks is by the time dessert is served, I'm splayed out on the floor. And I'm just doing the backstroke in a thick carpet. Everyone else is on beer number two. I'm on, you know, Coke and rum. I'm like, so when I'm drunk, number 12. So that's never the best. Let's talk to our old friend, Blind Mike. What's up, buddy?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey, happy post-Thanksgiving to you.
Same to you guys.
What's up, buddy?
Yeah, we went over to Blind Mom's house yesterday.
People are just bumping into each
other. Just a bunch of people.
They're
I'm
not
going
even
into
the
kitchen.
Turkey?
That's not the turkey.
Oh my God, we ate the corgi.
So All right. Hey, listen. Did you try the stuffed ham?
What do you mean? This my dad's stuffed ham?
Yeah.
No. No. It looked too gross.
Because I make them, and I can. And if I bring some over to you, will you try it for me?
Yes.
No. Yes.
It's actually very good because when you put all of that stuffing together, when you put all of those things together, the kale, the onions, it makes this really spicy dressing that you just, and you don't really taste it as onions, kale, and everything. It's delicious.
Yeah, if you bring some in, man, I will put it exactly where it needs to go. Oh, look. Look at that. It's delicious.
Is it like stuffing, like when you stuff it inside a bird, or is it like rolled in the ham?
No, because there's nothing delicious in there. It's just all the stuff. Like, what's left? Olives, you know, onions, parsley, kale. Every year, we put three kernels of corn on our plate, and we go around the table, and we say everything that we're thankful for.
Listen to these lunatics. They put the corn kernel game.
Yeah, and now it's like that. I mean, I don't know. There's like, you know, five fingers of little corn kernels.
We all place a walnut shell on our head and say, which Wayans brothers are favorite?
From years and years. I call Marlon. But my brother, he's been dating the same girl now for, I think, about 3 or 4 years, but he always, for some reason, finds a girl from, a different culture. I think probably because if they're from this culture, they're going to realize how weird he is. They're not going to want to, they have to not realize.
But the three corn kernel game, she just thinks is standard.
Well, she only knows like seven words. So she's always thankful. Last year, she mentioned being thankful for shampoo, which I was like, I wonder if she knows what that is.
Yes.
Or maybe in the country where she hails from, that doesn't exist.
That's what they use for money over there. Like Pert Plus can buy you a house.
This is Behind the Curtain with Justin Scott and Spiegel on 98 Rock.
So we had a conversation yesterday about the concept of Black Friday. Is it dying? I feel like we've turned a corner from in-store shopping to online shopping. Is Cyber Monday isn't even really a thing? I think it's just around the clock. If I see something that comes up on a television commercial or I hear in a radio ad, I just pull up my phone, bang, buy it, the end, over. But when was the last time, if ever, have you guys ever actually, you, Joe, you, Stacy, coming in on live on a Saturday? This definitely isn't recorded. Did you guys ever sleep out for anything, line up for anything?
I thought you were going to ask if I just went.
No way.
You ever camped out for anything?
No.
You never camped out?
I never camped out for tickets to see the Stones. I'm sure as hell not camping out for a microwave.
TV. Yeah.
I definitely stayed out front of a Walmart for 18 hours for an Xbox 360.
How'd that go?
Broke 4 months later. And you've never seen me almost take a sledgehammer to an apartment in Cockeysville at the end of Bedonia Road when that thing ground to a halt. The original Xbox 360s had a flaw where they'd overheat, melt, and would permanently shut down. I almost threw that thing at my own head. But yeah, I slept for... I got there the night...
Where were you in line?
Oh, I was number one.
All right.
I was number one. Well, here's how it worked. Sure. When the original Xbox 360 came out, you got two models. You got this basic bitch box that had nothing in it, just the system, one controller, garbage. Then you got the premium one, which had a hard drive, extra controller, came with the game, whole thing, a little bit more, but whatever.
You
had
to have
all the bells and whistles. Came with Duck Hunt. And they only had two of them at the Walmart. They actually told you, like, we have two premiums and we have 20 of the basics. So unless you are not only in line, you're at the front of the line, you ain't getting one. And I ain't getting the basic one. So for 18 hours, I sat from 6 p.m. the night before it opened up the following midnight.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was not smart.
Did you have to free-for-all it back to where it was, or do you have a number that allowed
you? They gave you a ticket.
Okay.
The minute you walked in, here you go, goodbye, thank you very much. I hooked it up. I played for 11 minutes, passed out.
You know when every Chick-fil-A opens, like a new one, and they do that thing where
they give you free,
like first 100 people Chick-fil-A for a year? I mean, would you do that? I mean, is that different?
God, I do love Chick-fil-A.
I love Chick-fil-A.
Right? I mean, for some waffle fries.
I do love Chick-fil-A. I remember when I lived out west, and they opened a Chick-fil-A with a double drive-through downtown, like Hollywood Boulevard downtown, a line that probably backed up for a mile and a half.
I just heard a story about Jerry Seinfeld. He parked his Justin heard the same story. He parked his Porsche illegally out in front of a club, and the police officers came by. They were going to tow it, And they go, well, this is Jerry Seinfeld's car. And they said, well, if he comes out and takes a picture with us, then we won't tow it. And he heard that. And he goes, no, just have him go ahead and tow it. Now, I'm not at that level of not care.
But
I am at a level of not care where I don't care how good the deal is. My time isn't worth anything. I'll spend 18 hours doing nothing. But I'm not going to spend it sitting outside a Walmart. No, I can't imagine what would be available to me to have me do that.
An Xbox that broke 4 months later. That's what would be available to you. I don't make great life choices. All right, coming up, we got a discussion about Black Friday. Who's been through it? Who would? Is it over? On Behind the Curtain. Black Friday. Stacey, been doing the story this morning about what retailers are doing to try and get people back through the front door, because who wants to slog through parking at the mall, walk through those high school hallways, get bumped into, screamed at, have to deal with the employee that would rather suck start a gun than be there in front of you while getting yelled at by the lady with the Kate Gosling, may I speak, with a manager haircut?
Yeah.
It's not worth it. It's not fun. You got to really entice me to be in there. Some of the stuff you've said, they've enticed people with booze or let people run on treadmills to try out shoes. I know a lot of places will have like, what is it? Nordstrom has like DJs. Nordstrom will have a DJ in there like spinning like, you guys ready to buy some pantyhose? Oh, yeah, we've got the deal on gigantic panties downstairs. Oh, size 42 for all the big ones. Yes. And today is Black Friday. And usually on Monday, Josh would do a story about tramplings and people getting, you know, mauled to death over that last flat screen.
So far.
Yeah, recant that.
It was in Alabama, Birmingham, Alabama, at some mall. There was apparently gunshots on the second floor of the mall, not confirmed though. Two women apparently getting in a fight. Mm-hmm. Still not sure what they were fighting over. And both of them refused treatment. No one was sent to a hospital, so I assume that means they weren't shot.
Just be two people fighting. It could be, you know what I mean? A fight that would have occurred anyway.
They might have done this in August.
Right.
Yeah, there was like
a
disagreement.
Closed a little bit early.
Well, gunshots will do that.
You think?
Yeah. Someone pops off one round and everyone's going to scream and stampede. There's a family member that I have, a cousin, that she's intelligent. She's tech savvy. As a matter of fact, I think she does IT at her company, which is not an IT company, but monitor breaks, I'll just call her Joyce. And she says she digs the competition. We're like, why would you ever, ever line up at the front of a store? She actually enjoys seeing the person like lean in to unlock the door and then the throngs of people.
Just train for a Tough Mudder or something?
Yeah, do a savage run. I mean, you do them, Stacey. Yeah, you come home covered in bruises, your wrists are broken, you're missing a tooth.
Apparently you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, but you know, you come home with a sense of accomplishment, but your skull isn't caved in for a $40 microwave.
That's true.
You've never left one of those with a 4K television, have you?
I have not.
No.
I need to figure that out, though.
You never had your ribs turned to pulp so you can get that Game Boy ahead of time? No, so you get a discount on the 12-pack of socks. So we ask you, 410-338-1098. Steven says, I did Black Friday once. It was like walking into the devil's back end. I will never do it again. I worked at a video game store. Shout out Video Game Exchange. You deserve to go out of business. That place was garbage. And I worked there on Black Friday, and you've never hated humanity less when they did the first 100 people through the door get $10 off any game, $20 off any system, and it's just a stampede of maniacs.
People love a deal. I mean, it could be the silliest little, you know, it doesn't mean anything.
Well, if it's one of these, like I said, they used to have, you know, the first 10 televisions cost $10 and people are sprinting to the back of the store. I mean, that's a little bit different than getting 10% off your Bed Bath & Beyond purchase.
Well, I'm looking right now. We got one of the 19 TVs in here, which I hope we got for Black Friday savings, up on MSNBC, and they're showing like footage of stuff in like downtown, but then they're showing like out in the country and stuff like that. Like it's quieted down.
Oh, look at that. All that's down.
Wow. Look at this, dude. They're showing like jewelry's down 12%. Appliances are down 24% in stores. Like people just aren't interested in it. Because no one wants to go in there and have their kneecap collapsed because someone behind them wants to get $12 off of a bike. Sammy Boots, what about you? What say you?
About Black Friday?
Yeah, have you ever braved?
No, I never went out for anything in particular. I have gone out before for just like clothes or random things, but I also have worked on Black Friday.
Oh, where'd you work?
Where, yeah.
That was at the good old Sports Authority in White Marsh before they went bankrupt.
Yeah.
So I don't regret leaving there. Uh-uh. But honestly, I worked all night long, which sucked on its own, but it really wasn't that busy even then. So I'm not surprised if it's not busy today.
It's mostly, though, like the Best Buys, the Walmarts, the Targets, I think, more so than
the big
like,
box ones.
Yeah. I mean, I remember one year, I think I was working a morning show. And so before I went into work, I stopped at like a shopping center that had like a Target and an Old Navy and a Kohl's just to see the people. And there were people outside of like the Old Navy's. It looked like the line wrapped around.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of these companies came under fire, too, which is why this has probably died off a little bit. And I think in the next 2 or 3 years, the concept of Black Friday will just be a dinosaur. It'll be an afterthought because you would hear about these larger stores, these big warehouse stores that would make their employees come in Thanksgiving night to start getting ready for next morning. Yep. And those companies were pariahs. They were looked at like, how dare you sons of bitches make your employees come in
some of them
on Thanksgiving night to get ready for the next day.
They'd be opening at like 4 a.m. Some of those stores are, and of course, nothing good happens at that point.
Well,
in time.
There's been back and forth through the years of controversy because of stores that wanted to open earlier and earlier and earlier and on Thanksgiving. And people say, you shouldn't be calling your workers in, let them spend time with their families. I mean, it's just silly.
You appreciate a company that takes care of you, but there's something to be said about a company that takes care of the employees. And I find out that they turn this thing into like a coal mine for their heavily underpaid employees to drag them in there at 5 p.m. on Thanksgiving night. And if they don't, they get fired and thrown into the chipper shredder and bring in someone else to come and work.
They'll get
the
another crappy retail job. Like they're fine.
Let's say you, James, line one. Good morning, James.
Hey, good morning, guys. Happy day after heartburn day.
Happy day after heartburn day to you too, buddy.
Hey, I just kind of had a little bit of a different take on the Black Friday thing. I had almost 22 people at my house yesterday, and I remember growing up as a kid, after Thanksgiving dinner, you had, people just passing out everywhere, hanging out, talking, and now because these places open at 5 and 6 on Thanksgiving, it was like, okay, we ate, thanks, we're out of here, we're going shopping.
Oh, it got people out of your house.
It just speeds it up,
That's not such a bad thing, actually.
You said people were passing out everywhere.
I'm all in. Black Friday's back, guys. Black Friday may return forever to get them out of my house.
We now take you behind the curtain with Justin Scott and Spiegel on 98 Rock.
Well, we had our first ever JSS Disgusting Thanksgiving Dinner in here, and I think the big takeaway from it, you'll hear coming up, was the fact that Josh just chainsawed through everything we put in front of him. There wasn't a bad dish as far as he was concerned. We had tofurkey, Watergate salad, congealed salad, some weird vegan brownie. We never got around to the cranberry sauce, or did we? And Josh, you mauled the tofurkey, which to me tasted like spiced sponge.
Yes. First time I had tofurkey, and I loved it. I loved the stuffing especially, and I loved the Nixon salad.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that you made, what was that?
It was a congealed salad.
Oh, yeah, that too. And it was actually delicious. It reminded me of Jell-O as a child.
I mean, it really just was Jell-O. And I feel like I did my buddies, my propers, by removing the diced onion and radish. And they wanted cream cheese in here. Now, I cut the cream cheese out of it because I wanted you to be able to see what was in it.
And cream images, cheese. Oh, yeah. Good move leaving the cream cheese.
Because you let the salad cool for an hour.
Yeah.
Then you fold in cream cheese and it gives it that, pastel hue to it. That it would have looked like the Waldorf salad, the Watergate salad. Waldorf salad contains your kin's lips. And by cutting that out of it, you could see what was in there. It had more of a consistency of Jell-O. And my favorite was the Watergate salad. I would not have thought I was going to enjoy that as much as I did.
That was with the marshmallow.
That was the marshmallow.
When you look
stuff
at the ingredients, it's like really what's not to like. It's just kind of a pistachio-flavored
goop, pudding, mm-hmm. whipped cream, marshmallows, pistachio. Just an odd hue. And that's not the... I'm still trying to think of the thing I made. It might have been the ambrosia salad. I think that was the thing I made that one year mm-hmm. when I was up in upstate New York at this Thanksgiving. And it was such an odd freaking combination. Just like the thing you made. You'll hear coming up when you read off the list of ingredients you left out.
Huh. Onions, radishes, and mandarin oranges? What maniac put that all in there? You said it on Monday or Tuesday that this strikes me as a dish that long ago when you had nothing. Almost like original Italian food. Italian food is from peasants who didn't have a lot to eat serving in the service of their lords and manor keepers, that they just had to eat whatever they could find. That's what I think this congealed salad came from. They just threw whatever was in the icebox in a jello mold, cut it into slices, and served it to their put-upon relatives.
Whoa.
Hear it now, the Justin Scott and Spiegel first ever disgusting Thanksgiving Day feast.
All right, what are we doing here? We're doing the gross Thanksgiving.
Last week we had the discussion, what is the least favorite Thanksgiving dish you're looking forward to? We've had the discussion, what's going to be the problem person at your table? Oh, we're all problematic if today's conversation is any indication. So now it's time for the Justin Scott and Spiegel Disgusting Thanksgiving Feast. Michael Anderson, if you would please prepare the plates. Ah, here we are. Mike Anderson, if you want to hop over. Oh, yeah, kid. Look at that.
Oh,
that sucks.
That you?
That's me. That's mine.
Well, that might actually be good. Is that pine? Whoa.
What? Yep.
Is this a recipe or
you make
this
up? I promise you it's a recipe. I actually cut stuff out of it. I'll tell you what I did first, because it was my idea. Congealed salad.
Oh.
Yeah, yes. Which, look at that, Josh. Look at that.
Oh, wow.
It sucks.
Oh, that is...
not good.
That is interesting.
Yeah, a congealed salad is essentially fruits, nuts, vegetables, just congealed. Hence the name congealed salad. Congealed.
What is it congealed by?
Jello. Standard Jello.
Is it lime flavored?
It is lime flavored Jello. Yeah. And the recipe called for walnuts, called for cashews, mandarin oranges, dried mango, pineapple, carrots, and here's where I started doing some cutting. I cut out the onions.
Oh.
It wanted onions. It wanted radish slivers.
Oh, well, oh dear.
And it wanted cream cheese. I didn't put those things in there.
Ooh. Oh, the tofurkey actually smells pretty good.
Yes, it does.
Oh, the consistency of the tofurkey looks so off, though.
It looks sketchy as hell. Yeah, send me some of that congealed salad there,
what
Scotty.
What is that?
That's a pineapple piece.
No, it's not.
Hold on, there's pineapple? Oh, God, this tofurkey sucks. It's there's dried mango, mandarin orange, and pineapple. Ooh, that's not a happy boy face.
So it smells like lime.
Yeah, it's a lot of lime.
It's just odd.
Yeah, it's weird. The carrots suck. And I had to eat that for years and years. So suffer as I suffer.
What's crunchy? What's the small thing that's crunchy?
You got carrots and cashews.
Carrots. Okay.
That are probably crunchy. You could just hand me the whole damn tin and I'll eat clean out of it.
Are these mandarins?
They are mandarin oranges, Josh.
I love mandarins.
Yes. Not bad. They're mandarin oranges.
It's odd.
It's very, very odd. All right. I made it. I'll eat it. Yeah. Oh, God.
Bad.
I'm having flashbacks.
I actually like it.
It's so and what you're supposed to do also is I was supposed to core out the middle, and you put cottage cheese.
Oh yeah.
And you take
a
forkful, you dip it in the cottage cheese, and then you shove it in your big dumb hole.
No, you listen to me. If I get violently ill because you put something in this,
Josh,
I better have washed your hands before.
Is
this all for me? This tofurkey,
Mike's hands.
Now this is what out of a package.
Mm.
Explain to me what this is.
Oh, that sucks.
It looks like tofurkey. Oh, here it is. Holiday. It's a tofurkey. Holiday vegetarian feast.
Oh, what have
I
done?
A rich, hearty, festive, plant-based, flexitarian approved. Ugh. It's like a big log of fake turkey meat with stuffing in the middle.
Oh, I f***ed up, man.
What?
I don't like my own creation.
Oh, I liked it.
I don't. I also, I didn't
Pass
even tell you guys
mic.
This. I don't like Jell-O.
Mmm.
I don't like the consistency of Jell-O.
This tofurkey is good.
Really?
Man,
try
some
of my congealed salad, Michael. Here, I'll just pass that down to you. Try it.
Oh, this is great.
So this is fake turkey.
I love this.
All right. Now, what's in the center? Is that a fake stuffing?
Yeah.
Oh.
You didn't
put
anything in here.
Consistency
like
bodily. No. Honestly, it's all in the up and up, brother. You're going to be great as rain.
No. No way. It's not terrible, but it's not good.
Is this the tofurkey you're speaking of? All right. I see wild rice. God, it's tough, man.
It is tough. Tough.
All right, here we go. Mouthful
makes
of tofurkey.
You work for it.
Yeah, it does. You got to earn it. You got to earn it.
All right, here we go.
I'm not going to eat it, but I'm not enjoying it.
Oh, man.
No.
It tastes like a sponge.
Yeah.
All right, sucks.
Oh.
Could be a little warmer.
I'm sorry. I don't like tofu. I'm like a picky 5-year-old. Michael, what else is on the menu?
We have the raspberry, the cranberry sauce, Jell-O.
I don't want to finish this. Oh, look at Josh going in on it like a lover's lips.
I love this.
Josh is beating the F out of that tofurkey. Josh is kicking its ass. Mm. Thank God they seasoned it to the degree that they did, because otherwise it would be.
Now let me try some of
this. Terrible. Dude, you're actually eating my congealed salad?
At the same time as
he's eating everything, dude. Well, he doesn't get to have Thanksgiving dinner.
You're doing what I thought Scott would do. What? I mean, Scott's the human garbage disposal. We can put anything in him. May I try, Scott, some of your Watergate salad, please?
Yeah.
Now, again, could you describe?
Nope.
Can you describe what the hell it is? Okay.
Let me see. Hold on.
There's no ingredients on there. I'm just going to take a forkful.
I'll look it up. Hold on.
Do we have any more stuffing?
This is the closest Josh will get to Thanksgiving dinner. And it
Watergate
sucks.
Salad.
Love
it. It's pistachio pudding, crushed pineapple, marshmallows, pistachio nuts, and whipped cream.
I feel like I've been attacked. All right, here we go. I'm going to try this. Here we go. Watergate big old scoop. Salad. Big scoop of Watergate salad. Okay, Hannibal Lecter.
Oh, my God.
Josh is getting intimate. He's giving that the old Larry Flint. All right, again, Livewire, join along. It's a Justin Scott and Spiegel disgusting Thanksgiving Day feast. All foods that no one likes. Here we go. Try the Watergate salad.
That was really good. That Watergate salad is pretty tasty.
That
wow.
It's too sweet, isn't it?
It's sweet. I'm going back in for a second scoop. Guys, try the Watergate salad. Shut up. Try it.
Who would have thought?
It's really good.
Mmm. That is.
Mike, what are your thoughts on everything? We have a congealed salad. We have a tofurkey.
Yeah, that tofu.
It's not. Yeah.
That tofu sucks.
It's close. It's close to being like somewhat decent, but it's not.
Josh is rip-sawing through this right now.
It's good.
It's like a hyena with a fresh kill. Like he killed a tofu deer.
So that texture doesn't bother you?
Mm-mm. It tastes like old people meat.
Ooh.
Try that. You mix it with this crap that Justin made, and it's delicious.
It sucks. Yeah, Mike, try some of Scott's Watergate salad. See, I'm going to be curious what you think about the Watergate salad, Josh. Very sweet. Very
right
sweet.
Here. Thank you.
And again, Josh, I did the due diligence. Right. Whoa, look at the scoop he just gave Josh.
Thank you.
I dare you to eat that much. All of it kosher, by the way. Not a single pork product.
What is in it again?
It's marshmallows, pistachio pudding, pistachios, whipped cream. Very sweet.
I love it. That's,
oh, my God.
Like ice cream.
I'm going to blow that bathroom up. How good is the Watergate salad?
I don't know what the hell
salad?
Is wrong with me. I love all of this.
Because you know you're going to be
morning. I yelled at the mayor.
Yeah.
I'm getting backlash on the internet.
Mm. Yeah, I'm with you. I like this.
Yeah, the Watergate salad's a hit.
Makes my teeth hurt, though. It's so sweet. Where did those brownies come from? What came with the...
Yeah, that came with the tofu.
Are they vegan brownies?
Did you just see the scoop that he put in his mouth?
Oh, this is wonderful.
Wow. Yeah,
happy Thanksgiving, guys.
Happy Thanksgiving
guys,
happy to you. Thanksgiving. Hey, happy Thanksgiving, everyone. I'm thankful
on
for
last,
all of you.
Last day of my broadcast career.
Are you kidding me? You're getting a promotion after this, by the looks of it.
Fudge brownies?
Now, what's gross about fudge brownies? Nothing. Okay, so you just gave us a nice dish. That was sweet of you.
Why not?
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Oh, man. Oh, wow. People are taking screenshots of you. It looks like you bit the plate.
Is that a vegan brownie?
Oh, is that a vegan brownie? Ugh, God bless it.
What does that even mean? No eggs or nothing like that? Or
as if I don't get enough of this.
No milk?
Crap at home. All right, here we go. The crust is good. Mm. If you know me, you know I love crust.
Not bad.
Both on my brownies and a lover.
Well,
that was actually a really good brownie.
Oh, that's a nice brownie.
That's a big brownie. Whoa.
It's a corner one, too.
Ooh, that's where you get the most crust.
Thank you. That's enough.
Okay.
I don't want to.
Don't kill him.
Let's try that brownie.
Yeah, there you go, buddy.
I'm mixing it with some of
the Watergate salad?
Yeah, the Nixon salad.
Mmm. And?
Let's see.
Wow.
Mmm.
Okay. All right, so the tofurkey's terrible. The Watergate salad was a hit. My congealed mess.
They had a whole bunch of salads over at the Growls. Shout out. I almost bought a ham salad. They had another thing called, like, summer salad. And they were all these, like, weird, just looking colored. I was almost going to get, like, two or three of them. I probably should have.
Oh, I love a home-cooked meal.
Well, Mike's going back for Watergate.
Oh, I need more.
That Watergate salad is the jam. When you're done with that, pass that on over here. I want another scoop.
We should have got an ambrosia salad.
Ambrosia salad looks like it sucks. Or like a baked Alaska, I think I would have gotten in on. Man, you gave Josh all the Watergate salad. Well, hey, we hope you and yours enjoy your Thanksgiving dinner and all the disgusting salads and casseroles and whatever weird grandma onion loaf she shoves into you that hopefully her weird mole and psoriasis didn't rub up against too much.
Yeah, I'm getting pumped for tomorrow now.
Man, I'm getting jacked for. I'm bringing Watergate salad to dinner.
I might too.
Well, you better have a lot of TP ready to go.